Stay up to date on the green and gold all off season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Potawatomi Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
You might not know I'm here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some.
It's one of my favorite things we do on this program. Talking to this guy. Very popular with the farmers of Iowa. Very popular with Jason and Kelsey, his neighbors, donkeys in Florida. Very popular in Detroit. And very popular here. It is Brian Bulaga, Iowa. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are we doing?
Are you a Vegas guy?
I used to go a little, you know, every couple of years. Now I don't think I can hang. I just can't hang. I mean, if I go, it's a completely different trip than what it used to be. It would have to be, you know, a little more relaxed. Yeah, maybe a couple shows. Definitely not how I used to do it, where walking back into the hotel room at 4 a.m. and then waking up at 9 for breakfast, then pools open at 10:30, 11, and do it all over again. So, yeah, no, I can't hang like that anymore. There's no way.
So, Tausch, how do you think you hung, considering your age and where you're at in your life over these 4 days?
Really strong. Very strong, because I did what Blue just said two of the 3 or 4 days, however long I've been out here. So, but I'm with Brian. I think it's, you know, that's the great thing about Las Vegas. It has a little taste for everybody. Like, whatever your flavor is, you're going to be able to go and do it. And then it's just a matter of how long you want to continue on that path. So, like, you mature, you do different things. And now with the Sphere, I will not be coming back for a while, but when I do, it's going to be something at the Sphere, because that is a unique, big, and everybody's raving about it. That will be my next Las Vegas trip. Hopefully the Killers or somebody of that ilk that I want to go watch.
Are you playing golf?
I did, yeah. We played Las Vegas Country Club and then Rio Seco, which was an awesome golf course. Beautiful, and the home. It was great. It was 90-some degrees. But, Blue, like you said, man, you have a couple of nights, you have a Tito's, a Coors Light, next thing you know, I'm ready to get the heck out of here. And that's kind of where I've been for the last, I don't know, 12, 18 hours, something like that.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you.
That's why Brian goes to exciting places like Detroit and Green Bay and on the tailgate tour now. That's more his speed. Yeah. Brian, the rookie camp took place Friday and Saturday. I've made this reference a few times, kiddingly, but also because it illustrates a point, and that is you were once a first-round pick at tackle, and it was different than what it is now, right? Because Rasheed Walker is not as accomplished as Mark Tauscher was. But you didn't just walk in and put his old butt on the bench. You had to wait, and if he hadn't suffered an injury, you would have waited even longer. What are your expectations for Jordan Morgan, given the different dynamic of the incumbent not being a 10-year vet, but being a guy who started 17 games last year, but is certainly not the same as Mark Tauscher was?
Yeah, I mean, I fully expect this left tackle battle to probably be one of the best ones to watch during camp, because I think Jordan Morgan's going to be given every opportunity to win that job. I think he's going to get plenty of reps with the ones. He's going to get preseason games with the ones. I think like you said, my situation was different because I was drafted and Tausch and Cliffy were there, and there wasn't really much expectation for me to unseat one of those two guys. It just wasn't going to happen. Their experience, their knowledge, it just wasn't going to happen. In this situation, it's completely different, like you said, with Rasheed Walker, right? He played in games last year, but he had to fight for it. He finally, you know, won the job late in the year, although he did play well. But this kid's coming in, and they expect a first-round pick, especially kind of the way he's been talking throughout the media, you know, early on about how confident he is. And I love that he's confident. I think it's fantastic. But he seems very confident that he can win this job. And Green Bay will give him every opportunity to win that job. Because if you look at the other four positions, I feel like they're pretty set. Obviously, there is competition. I understand that. You know, it is younger guys. Probably the only spots that are true locks are Tom and Elton. If you look at it from, if you want to talk about competition, but I mean, pretty much four out of the five, we're fairly sure who's lining up week one. It's the left tackle position. And I think Green Bay, I don't see any reason why he won't get every shot to kind of unseat Rashid Walker to be the day one starter there.
So, you
Blue,
know,
do you think, Brian, do you think that that's in the best interest for Jordan to jump right in and be that if he does win that job? Or do you think, because I would bet that Green Bay would not be upset at all if Jordan Morgan struggles a little bit in the preseason, continues to work, gets to understand how, you know, being a pro is, Rashid Walker plays well, and they can kind of almost go not platoony, but really let Jordan kind of grow and not have to put him out there because he's head and shoulders better than Rashid. Or do you think the Packers are like, we drafted you first, we want you to be that guy right away?
No, I agree with you. I think if they would love it, right? Obviously, if Rashid Walker makes leaps and bound improvements over the offseason in a training camp and he shows himself to be the better left tackle, I think he's going to get that opportunity over Jordan Morgan simply because he's got the experience and he's playing a little bit better and X, Y, and Z. And I looked at it as, you know, very beneficial for myself to be able to watch you and Cliffy kind of how you guys worked, how you guys behaved in the locker room and film study. I kind of got to learn how to be a pro. Now, obviously, when you got hurt, I was not a right tackle. I had never played a snap at right tackle. So mine was a little bit different of a wake-up call, like, hey, you're going to go do something you never done before. So good luck and have fun out there against Brian Arakpo. So it's a little bit of a different situation. But at the same time, like, I think Green Bay would be ecstatic if Rashid Walker won the job outright and Morgan got to develop and learn and kind of, you know, figure out his game early on in his career so that when he does get the opportunity, could be this year, could be next year, could be on a rotation basis late in games if they're playing well and they're winning, to make sure when he goes out there he's confident and he has a good showing. So certainly I think Green Bay would be very happy if Rashid Walker comes into camp and shows this is, you know, wins the job outright. That would be ideal for them, I believe.
So, Brian, you know that the end of the locker room that's my favorite is the offensive line area, even if once upon a time certain offensive linemen were making fun of me for a girl I like from DeForest and whatever else. It's where the best conversations are. And it's not – maybe it's because you guys – know that you're not the glamour guys, right? There's not a ton of ego down there. Now, if there is something that you might be egotistical about or prideful about, it's being the left tackle, right? If there is a position of, quote, glamour, it's that one. And certainly Dave leaned into it during his time.
Yep.
Jordan Morgan comes in, and basically he said to us on Friday, I want to be the left tackle. That's all I've ever played. I want to protect Jordan Love's blind side. I'm guessing that a young 20-something fellow that came in from Iowa who had played left tackle was maybe thinking, hey, that's where I'm most comfortable. I think I'm pretty good. I think I can do this at this level. So help me go through how you had to flip your mentality and then how you finally got your opportunity to be the left tackle, and then you tore your ACL in family night, so you still never got to be the left tackle. But is that something that Jordan Morgan will have to be able to shift if it comes to that, and how did you do it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my mentality when I came in, I mean, obviously – you learn really quick that it's a different game, especially, you know, I did the rookie mini camp, and obviously – I felt great. You know, I was going against other rookies. It felt,
tryout guys.
You know, yeah, it felt really college-like. And I was like, man, this is great. And then we go into OTAs, and there's Clay Matthews. And he is absolutely ripping off the edge and, you know, trying to put his helmet in my chest every single play. And it's not like it knocked my confidence, but it showed me that this is a different level. This is a different ball game. And then obviously I got to see how Chad and Tausch worked. And I'm like, I'm not playing at the same caliber that these guys are. Like, it's just, I'm not there yet. Like, sure, I can develop and I can get those skills, but these guys are playing at a very confident level. They understand the offense way better than me, no matter, even if Cliffy may not have known it all the time when I asked him questions on, you know, what was the call there and what was the adjustment. He might have not always gave me the straight answer.
I'll just block the defensive end. Just block the D end.
Yeah, that's a lot of the advice I got from him. But, you know, I learned really quick that I'm going to have to take my opportunity wherever it comes, is essentially the way I looked at it. And I got the opportunity, and I think it was week two against Buffalo. Chad played one series, came out, said his knee was too sore, and I played the whole Buffalo game my rookie year at left tackle. And then 2 weeks later, obviously, Tausch got hurt in the Detroit game, but, you know, he finished the game like the warrior he is, finished the game out. And then I found out on Wednesday the next week that, hey, you're going to be playing right tackle. So you have to be able to adjust on the fly. And, like, this is still this, like, you look at it, I mean, Rashid Walker's not going to go out quietly, right? Like, he's not going to bow out to this. I mean, I got to spend time with him, obviously, on that tailgate tour, and he's very confident in himself. He wants this position. He wants to be one of the five guys. So this is going to be a competition, and the only thing that I hope it doesn't become, especially in the locker room, because, I mean, at least in the O-line group, with the way Jordan Morgan kind of presented himself with his first interview, the guy's very, very outright saying that he wants the left tackle job. That's all good things. But, like, you know, competition's a good thing. But when that kind of – if that continues to grow and fester in that room, that's not a good thing, right? Like, this – like, everyone in that room wants the best five guys out there. And that's the thing that I loved about the offensive line room, is that regardless of your draft position, you know, they're going to play the best five guys. And that's just how they normally do it, especially that's the way Campy did it. There wasn't any pulling any punches because you were drafted here or there or whatnot. I mean, if you look at Green Bay's offensive line through the times I was there, it was fourth rounders, third rounders, fifth rounders. You know, I mean, it was guys from all over the map. It didn't matter where you were taken. So he just has to be ready to, A, compete, which it sounds like he's going to do, but also be ready to kind of accept the role that you're given and not create any issues within that room, because that room is very vital, and it is the best room, I feel like, in a locker room. There's great cohesion in it. There's great brotherhood in it. And you don't want to – you know, kind of offset that dynamic that room needs to function as a unit out there. So I'm all for healthy competition. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's going to make Walker better. I think it's going to make Morgan better. I think it's going to make the unit better as a whole. But he just has to be ready to accept the role that's given to him, whether that is at left tackle or whether that's competing at guard or right tackle. I mean, I don't know what the Green Bay is going to do, but he just has to kind of be ready to accept a little humble pie. No matter what, you have to do that when you walk into an NFL locker room. Humble pie is going to be given to you, and you have to accept it, not have it ruin your confidence, obviously, and your expectation for yourself that you can play at that level, but just that there's guys that have put in time that are most likely more polished than you, that understand the game better than you, understand the offense better than you, and just try to learn from them. And if you learn and you develop at a high rate, you're going to put yourself in an opportunity to get snaps and get play time. So that's kind of the way I look at this situation as a whole. I mean, and maybe I'm looking at it just because I'm looking at it from my standpoint. When I came into the locker room and there were very experienced veterans, and I knew that there's a really good chance I'm not getting on the field week one. Maybe on field goal team, which I did. I'm pretty sure I gave up a blocked field goal that game against Chicago. if I'm being dead honest, I think. So it was just like one of those things that, you know, you kind of have to be ready to do what's asked of you and make the most out of the opportunity.
Yeah. Blue, I was wondering, like, what advice would you give Jordan in that regard? Because I don't think, I mean, if you had came in with that approach, you'd have gotten crushed. Just from a perspective, you know, if you came in and were like, I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to do that, So is there, because humble pie is something, and I think as a rookie, you try to figure things out. You want to get to the spot where you're going to be playing. But I always was of the belief, especially early on, just kind of keep your head down, work, don't make any proclamations. And it's just a different era of football, though. Guys are confident, and with all these platforms, you're kind of letting it go and saying what you think, and that's not always the best interest for how you approach in your career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, my approach when I walked in was exactly what you said. Keep your head down, work, listen to guys talk, listen to the way the veterans in the room, you know, go about their day, you know, and how they treat practice, how they treat all those things, and just try to absorb as much as you can. Make sure you're paying attention to reps when you're not on the field. Like, I learned so much from you and Cliffy, just watching you from behind when I was with the twos and just seeing what you guys were doing. And I mean, I learned a lot from that. I'd stand next to Campy, I'd get the play, I try to go through the play in my brain, what I would do when you guys walked up to the line of scrimmage, looked at the defense, and then I watched. And if I had a question, you know, like I said, I'd ask Cliffy at times, and sometimes he'd give me a good answer, sometimes he wouldn't. But I just tried to absorb as much as I could. And if I'm giving him advice, I'm kind of saying the same thing. Like, hey, when you get your opportunities, when you get out there on the field, make the most out of it. Don't be combative in the room if you make a mistake or if you do that. Ask questions of the older guys. They want you to be successful. They want you to play well. But don't go in there with the attitude that I'm unseating this guy immediately. This is my gig. Mm-hmm. This is that. Just you know, keep your head down, work, and kind of let your work speak for itself. And that would be the way that, you know, I would kind of shift my advice to him.
Yep.
More with Brian Bulaga. I find myself wondering that if this was Swingers – is Tausch Vince Vaughn's character Trent, and is Bulaga Mikey, Jon Favreau's character?
You know what I was thinking? Is there any city that is less Wildy-esque than Las Vegas?
Yes, there's not. There is
no, there's
one.
Not. There's no, city that's less Jason Wildy than Las Vegas.
I will tell you which city it is, and we'll get more important things from Brian Bulaga. Next, it's Wildy and Tausch.
You're listening to Wildy and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN. Missed any of the show? Find us on Wisconsin On Demand wherever you get your podcasts. It's free, it's everywhere, and it's for you.
Put your money where your mouth is. That's what you get for waking up in Vegas. Get up and shake the glitter off your clothes now. That's what you get for waking up in Vegas.
Katy Perry and Mark Tausch are both having woken up in Vegas at different times. Brian Bulaga, who has done so as well, continues with us. All right, Tausch, to answer your question before we get to more important things from Brian. I am a city vacation guy. Like, Paul and I went on our honeymoon to New York City. I love going to San Francisco. Like, I love cities. I actually like Las Vegas. And I actually like the other city that's not a Wildy city that's even worse, and that's New Orleans. But I only like them during the day.
Wow.
Like, I want to go to shows. I love to eat, so Vegas is great for that. I love collecting those trading cards that those guys hand out as you're walking up and down the strip. I've got them next to my Robin Yount rookie card. But I don't want to I'm not a Vegas guy at night. New Orleans, I love the food. I love the music. I don't need to walk past the place where you can, quote, wash the girl of your choice in a shower. That's not my thing.
Just wait. What?
So,
girl of your choice?
So the Packers play in the Super Bowl in January of 1997. I'm 24 years old. It's my first year on the beat. And one of the many seedy establishments in the French Quarter. And again, I went to a Lutheran high school. I did go to the University of Wisconsin, so I did see some things. Had some things going on during my college years. But I was still a little bit naive, probably, at that point. And the kind of stuff that goes on in the French Quarter should stay in the French Quarter, too. Including there was an establishment. That's what their advertisement was. Which I was not... I did not take part. I know that comes as a surprise to you. So there are great things about both of those grimy, slimy, gross cities. I just don't think I'm probably cut out for them after, say, 7 p.m.
My point is, you're not a Vegas guy. You just said it. You're not a Vegas
during
guy.
The day.
Why are you trying to act like you are a Vegas?
Because I like Cirque du Soleil. Paul and I went there twice. We loved Cirque du Soleil. God. The food is great. The shopping.
Blue, do you think, does this sound like Jason loves Vegas? Like, I don't know why he can't just admit, it's not my cup of tea. I don't need to do it. But he can't do that. And he's trying to, like, go back around. Like, what is he doing?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, Jason, it's okay. Like, if you're not a Vegas guy, you're
it's
not
okay.
Vegas.
Not everything has to be for you. Yes.
It's okay.
I and enjoyed, you know what, my like, visit there. They've got some nice outlet malls. It was fun.
Outlet malls. Yeah, Vegas is the Johnson Creek of Wisconsin. That's what they've always said.
Okay. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. Brian, what else? You and I talked on the Homer Hour on Monday night, and you asked me a lot of questions about the rookie camp. What are you – we're going to talk to the offensive assistants today. So we're going to talk to Jason Vrabel, who is now just the offensive passing game coordinator. They've promoted Ryan Mahaffey to be the wide receivers coach. So they've got two guys working with those young wide receivers regularly. I'm super interested in how exactly that dynamic works, because there is not the Davante Adams alpha, and they're all kind of nipping at each other's heels. I'm eager to see how they expect that to work out in year two and three for these guys that are already there. What are you intrigued by right now when it comes to this team?
I mean, I think the thing that, you know, sticks out to me, obviously, besides what we just talked about, the kind of the offensive line, is how it's going to play out in the back end at the safety position. Obviously, drafted a lot of safeties, right? Like, a lot of guys, I mean, and not just late round picks, early round picks. And obviously we know Xavier McKinney is the set in stone guy. There was no ever question about that. But who's going to partner with him? Who's going to be the guy that is his running mate back there? That's a question of mine. I think we all kind of know how the DB or corner position is going to play out, right? Like Stokes and Jair. I mean, Nixon's going to come in at nickel when needed, or however Halfley kind of configures that. But it's who kind of fills in after that would be the only thing that I have a question on, and how that plays out. Then obviously the linebacker position, you said it on Monday, the guys they drafted, they're not, you know, what Tausch and I were used to playing against in linebacker positions. They're more of the modern day linebacker. They're sideline to sideline guys. They're great in coverage. They're fast. They're not really the Jeremiah Trotter built linebackers. So it would be who is going to be the second linebacker on the field. I mean, obviously McDuffie's in house. He's very comfortable with the scheme that's there with Halfley. He played at Boston College, but who's going to win that job? Who is going to be the second linebacker on the field at all times? And that to me is going to be a very interesting battle that I think we look at the roster. There's competition there. There's obviously, you know, players that maybe have different skill sets that fit certain situations. But at the end of the day, you got to have your guy that's going to go out there and be the guy, the second guy out there. So those are the positions that I'm really looking forward to. I mean, the wide receiver room, regardless of the new structure that they have in place with Vrabel and the new wide receiver coach, like, I guess my only question would be is Watson, right? Like, we kind of saw this team with these young guys that all stepped up and they played really well, and they all offer something different, which I think is really great with this receiver room. But where does Watson kind of fit into this thing, right? Like, we saw him play really well against Detroit when he came back, and he had a big game, a couple catches, a bunch of yards, touchdowns. But, like, you know, for most of the season, he wasn't around. And this wide receiver group grew and grew, and guys kind of fit into their roles. And we saw this room kind of take off. So starting fresh all over again, you know, in training camp, where does he fit in that, you know, in that rotation of guys, and what's his role? And is he going to be able to beat out a lot of the guys that played well last year? Is there, you know, because if you look at the way LaFleur plays, I mean, rarely is it just five wide and going out there. You know, there's normally tight ends and running backs and two or three receivers, and who's the three guys that are out there constantly, and that's another exciting thing to kind of pay attention to as we get into OTAs and obviously training camp, when you know that's the business end of guys winning positions.
Blue, did you get a chance to see the Tom Brady roast? And if so, what'd you think?
I did watch it. I mean, it was funny. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was
Jason's a big roast guy, just like
he just doesn't like especially any of the when they do it in Vegas.
Jokes.
Yeah,
He doesn't like any of the jokes though, but he loves the roast.
Yeah, like Abby and I watched it. And you know, there were a couple guys that went up there whose jokes were not that great. But for the most part, I mean, I was laughing most of the time. I thought a lot of the comedians that went up there, you know, the guys and gals that do it the most were hilarious. I thought, what was her name? Nikki Glaser. She was absolutely hilarious. Like I thought she was the best of the night. I thought she was awesome. It was well put together. And, you know, Tom kind of went out there at the end, thought it could have been a little bit better. You know, I thought he could have done a little bit better, but I know he wasn't writing his own jokes, but you know what? Overall, he didn't do that bad. There were a lot of shots fired about previous marriage and things of that. I mean, that's tough to sit through. I mean, I don't care. I get it's a joke, but man, there was some shots fired. But it was an entertaining 3 hours to watch. I thought it was good. And I always find, you know, what I found funny too was the guys going at Belichick. Right, because obviously for so long they've never been able to do that, and obviously speak their mind and kind of throw jabs at their old coach, and they were able to do it, and I thought it was funny, and but hats off, I'd love to see
too,
more
did
of it.
Didn't it feel like when Edelman went after him about having a job, like he really really liked being able to do that.
Yes, they enjoyed their. You know, I get they were jokes, but they weren't jokes. It felt real. You know what I mean? So you know, I hope, you know, because I'm sure the ratings on that were out of the roof. I mean, I'm sure Monsters. They were fantastic. Yeah. I hope they do more athlete roasts. I think that would be great. I think it'd be really fun to watch. And,
who do you
want to
see? Who is the next person you want to see that would get roasted?
I don't know if he would ever do it, but I'd love to see Tiger Woods go up there.
That's what Tosh said.
That would be great.
I'd love to see Tiger.
How would Aaron Rodgers do under those circumstances?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know if he'd ever agree to it. I don't know if he'd ever agree to it. I just
Were there any unofficial roasts performed by the offensive line from time to time on Thursday nights on him?
Yeah, I mean, guys would get after him all the time. And like I've always said, like, Corey was always the guy that went full throttle. Obviously, I wasn't, you know, at the O-line dinners prior when Tausch was there with the guys. Like, I wasn't there. But it was always Corey. He went the hardest. And then Sitton from time to time. And then TJ. Those would be the guys that would go at Aaron the hardest. And it, like I said, it was always Corey and Aaron, you know, debating and, you know, intellectuals having conversations that were digs at each other that I always enjoyed.
Well, I hope that someday I'm in Vegas or maybe in New Orleans and we can have a roast of Mark Tauscher, because I'd like to be part of that. All right, Brian, last thing before you go. So, look, I know that we are a long way away from the season, but I was talking about this with Rutledge and Hamilton yesterday, and I want you to tell me if I'm over my skis, because I gave Tausch a lot of grief about getting ahead of himself last season, and as it turned out, these dudes were 6 minutes away from playing in the NFC Championship game, right? And if their rookie kicker makes a kick, maybe they are. But it almost feels like we are, I don't want to say anointing them, but we're almost taking it as a given that they're going to make another jump and they're going to win 11, 12 games and Jordan Love's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league for an entire season. Is there anything to that that gives you pause? I hope that's the case because that makes for a hell of a story all season long. But I am curious if it feels to you at all like we're... Because I just keep hearing the coaches and Goody and LaFleur talk about how nothing is guaranteed, nothing is promised. We need to make sure these guys understand that what we did last year doesn't mean anything. Do you have that, I don't want to say concern, but do you have that vibe at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, I would say, concern is that a young group tries to live off what they did last year, right? And that's my only thing is when you have a younger group and they did accomplish a lot last year and they did play really well last year, those things just don't automatically carry over into the following season. I always looked at it with how talented we always were that you had to go out there and earn that right to be that group every season. Every training camp, you had to go out there, prepare yourselves, get ready, and earn the right to be one of the best teams in the NFL. And I'm not saying that these guys aren't going to do that or they don't have that mentality, but to let last season's success just think that that's going to carry you over into this season is a big mistake. And I know LaFleur knows that. Obviously, he's seen the high, then the low, and now he's trying to get this thing back up to the highest point again that he can. So he understands the kind of roller coaster of the whole thing, and he understands the youth of the roster, right? And he knows mm-hmm. that he can't have these young guys, you know, being too comfortable. Like, right? Like, that's the thing that you don't want to see is that these guys become comfortable because last year was a grind, and they absolutely earned it, and they got it done, and they figured it out, and they ended up playing fantastic at the end of the season. So you hope that same mentality, that underdog, chip-on-your-shoulder mentality carries over into the start of the season. Now, I'm not saying they can't be confident and know that they got dudes on the team that can play well. They should know that. They should have that confidence, but that confidence has to be earned again once they get into training camp and you're really getting ready for a season. And listen, there's veteran guys on the team. I'm not saying that this is just a young group. They got veteran guys that understand how to, you know, crank it up a notch and motivate guys and elevate levels of play. But if we look at this thing as a whole, it still is a young group. Mm-hmm. It's obviously not as big as a concern as I had last year about the group because of how things finished out and how they grew throughout the season. Obviously, you know, the youth ended up, you know, growing up real quick and playing really well, but you just hope to see that steady development and hunger that they had last year towards the end start out right away. And I'm not going to sit here and say that they won't hit, you know, a patch in the season that isn't great. I hope it's not the same as October was last year, right?
Right.
I think everyone would find that as unacceptable, especially with everything that they shown that they can do last year. But there's going to be a time, there's always a time in a season, no matter how good you are, that you're going to hit a little rough patch. And then when you hit that little rough patch, it's how do you come out of it and how quick do you come out of it? And I think that's more of what I'm looking for is when they do hit a little turbulence in a season, you know, do they rely on that experience that they built last year of going through a big rough patch and pulled themselves out of it and end up playing? So that's kind of what I'm looking for is how do these guys handle adversity in an NFL season again when it hits? Because it always hits, and how do they come out of it? And that's really, to me, the only thing that I'm looking for with this team.
All right, Brian. Abby and Paula can coordinate our trip to the Las Vegas outlet malls, and we'll get that on the calendar. All right, buddy. Thanks for your time. We appreciate you.
All right, guys.
That is Brian Bulaga, Iowa. We will get to the 11 o'clock hour momentarily. Want to remind you, we didn't talk a lot of Bucks today. We did talk Bucks on Monday when Justin Garcia was our cousin sub of the day. But if you're itching for more Bucks coverage, check out Behind the Bucks on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks dives deep into Bucks and Six, that culture that unknowingly was created by former Bucks star Brandon Jennings. Take a look at the Brandon Jennings story, the origin of Bucks and Six, how it became a rallying cry, and what it truly means to Jennings and Bucks fans alike. Check out Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and wherever you get your podcasts. Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher. The 10 o'clock hour starts in 2 minutes. It's Wilde and Tausch.